Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase Mobile App is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan Chase & Company.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Pushkin.
I'm Maeve Higgins, and this is Solvable, interviews with the world's most innovative thinkers who are working to solve the world's biggest problems.
My Solvable is to end child marriage globally by the year 2030.
That's Mabel Van Oranje, and she is trying to solve a problem which is bigger than you might think. Child marriage is a worldwide problem. Globally, 1 in 5 girls are thought to be married as children. That means that about 12 million children are getting married every year. Child marriage happens everywhere, including right here in America. It was only last year that Delaware and New Jersey became the first states to outlaw marriage for anyone under the age of 18. The state of Missouri has the most lenient law in the nation that allows 15-year-olds to wed with only one parent's signature required. But child marriage happens most often in developing countries. The problem cuts across ethnic, cultural, and religious lines and can be found everywhere, from Africa to the Middle East, Asia to Europe, and like I mentioned, here in America. UNICEF says that marriage before the age of 18 often amounts to a fundamental violation of human rights. There are many things that increase the risk that a child will get married, including poverty, the idea that marriage will provide protection, social norms and ideas about family honour, or even just customary or religious laws that condone child marriage. Countries like Niger and the Central African Republic and Bangladesh, they have among the highest rates of child marriage in the world, and they're all struggling with a multitude of other issues too. In today's episode, you'll hear Mabel talking mainly about girls. Boys being married is, of course, a violation of their rights too, but it's far more common for girls. Child marriage is often driven by patriarchal values and the desire to control female sexuality. And the consequences of a child marriage, well, they can be devastating. Pregnancy is consistently among the leading causes of death for girls aged 15 to 19 worldwide. Girls who marry before 18 are more likely to experience domestic violence than their peers who marry later. And it often has a terrible effect on the girl's mental health too. So, this is an extremely worthy solvable that I'm really glad we're discussing. Mabel Van Oranje has been a global advocate for freedom, justice, and development for more than 20 years. And most recently, she's thrown herself into her work as the initiator and chair of Girls Not Brides, the global partnership to end child marriage. Now, that partnership is between more than 1,200 organizations in more than 95 countries, and they're all committed to ending child marriage and enabling girls to fulfill their potential. Oh, and you'll hear Mabel mention the Elders in a moment. And in case you haven't heard of them, the Elders were set up by Nelson Mandela as a kind of a super group of former heads of state. They all work together now for peace, justice and human rights. Mary Robinson, Desmond Tutu, Jimmy Carter, basically all of the coolest older people that we've got. That's the Elders. And from 2008 until 2012, Mabel was CEO of the Elders. That's when she began to focus on her solvable, which is ending child marriage. All right, here she is now in conversation with Jacob Weisberg.
Child marriage is happening every year to 12 million girls all over the world. That means a girl almost every 2 seconds getting married. And so the number of child brides is not only enormous, but the consequences are really devastating. I know countless stories of girls who told me that their wedding day was the day they had to leave school. It was the day that they were shipped off to live with a family of a husband who they had never met before, who is older in age often, and they go live with their in-laws then. And, you know, for them, their wedding night could be the night they get pregnant, even though they themselves are still a child. And so what you then see is that there's a disproportional high problems around maternal health and even, you know, maternal death for child brides. The chances that their babies will survive are much lower than women who have their first child after the age of 18. They're more often becoming the victims of violence, domestic violence, by the hands of their husbands or their in-laws. In some cases, it seems like they're more likely to become HIV infected. And so what child marriage really is for these girls is turning from what was maybe a life with a reasonably bright future, turning their lives basically into hell. Now, that's happening on a massive scale. But what it also means is that, you know, as a world, we have said we want, you know, to achieve the SDGs. Now, 8 out of these 17 sustainable development goals, including education, including maternal health, including infant health, including violence, et cetera, they're linked to child marriage. And so the idea that we can ever get every girl into school or that we can ever reduce maternal mortality if we continue to ignore the issue of child marriage is just a dream. So I believe ending child marriage wouldn't only be really good for these 12 million girls, but it also means that if we ever want to eradicate poverty, we need to make sure that these girls actually can live productive, healthy, happy lives.
So I'm curious, Mabel, what brought you personally to this problem? Why is child marriage the thing that you've committed your life to solving?
Well, it happened when I was working in 2010 for the Elders, you know, Nelson Mandela's organization of eminent former presidents, prime ministers, etc. And the Elders had said, we want to work on gender inequality. They felt that gender inequality is the biggest injustice of the 21st century. And they specifically wanted to look at that through the lens of how religion and tradition, which are normally forces for good in our lives, too often religion and tradition get misused to justify discrimination against girls and women. And so they spoke out about that. It got a lot of traction. And then we started looking at, like, is there in this whole issue of gender inequality a specific example that would benefit from getting the attention of the Elders, but that isn't yet kind of on the global agenda? And at some point, I was therefore looking at what could the Elders do and having lunch with a friend, and we started talking about child marriage. I thought it's interesting. The two words say it all, child marriage. But at the same time, I also thought it's interesting. You never hear about it. You know, you would go to these big UN conferences about education or about health or about development, and the word child marriage was rarely uttered. And so I thought, I'm curious, is this 100,000 girls a year? Is it maybe 500,000 girls a year, maybe 1 million girls a year? And when we then found out it's actually 12 million girls a year, I felt like, this is crazy. How can there be a problem that is so big, that is having such a huge impact on poverty eradication, and it's completely ignored? And I think that's partially because these girls are more or less invisible. You know, they're minors. They don't speak English in many cases. They live in faraway rural places. So for them to self-organize and put their issue on the global agenda is just impossible. If you think about, you know, the success of the AIDS movement, for example, to a large extent that was driven by men infected by the HIV virus who really put the issue on the global agenda. I think another reason why child marriage wasn't really getting the attention it deserved was because it's driven by complex issues. People do it either because of tradition. So, you know, you do it because your generation and the generation before you and the generation before them has always done this. And so people don't really think about it. Or people do it because they're concerned about the sexual safety of their daughters. Imagine that she would get pregnant before marriage and thereby dishonor the family or herself. Some people do it because of poverty. You know, marrying a daughter off means one less mouth to feed. Or in the case of India, the younger the girl is, the less high the dowry that the family of the girl has to pay to the family of the groom. But in the end, it's all related to gender inequality. It's all that idea that girls are less important than boys. And so I think the reasons why this happens are complex, which is why I think maybe one of the reasons why people didn't want to touch it. And I personally believe the idea that something is complex doesn't mean that therefore it isn't important. And I feel that this is very important, and the elders agreed. And so we then said, okay, we're going to change this.
You've met girls who've escaped from child marriage. I wonder if you give me more of a sense of the face of the problem. Where is it? And what's the experience of these girls like? Do many of them get out? What because as you say, it's mostly silent in that these girls are denied a voice. We don't hear the story of child marriage from their perspective for the most part.
So I've now traveled to many places where child marriage happens, and it happens truly all over the world, across religions, across cultures, across continents. And it's an illusion. I mean, none of the holy book says marry your daughters before 18, but it is happening across all religions, for example. And the highest numbers are in sub-Saharan Africa. The country with the highest percentage rate is Niger, where 3 out of every 4 girls are married before the age of 18. The country with the highest absolute number is India, which has obviously a huge population, but also the rates there are quite high. So South Asia is also really problematic. But then you see child marriage, for example, also in Latin America. And the stories of the girls in Latin America are often slightly different than, for example, the girls in Bangladesh or the girls in Africa. And so it's very important to, you know, look context-specific, why does it happen? For example, in Ethiopia, there a lot of it seems related to basically tradition. We always do this, and therefore, and many fathers and mothers don't even know that there are alternatives and that actually it would be, they think that this is the right thing for their daughters, and they don't realize how harmful it is. But in Ethiopia, I'll never forget, I met a group of married girls, and there was this girl I was seated next to, and I asked her, how old were you when you got married? And she said, I don't really know because I don't know when I was born, because many of these girls don't have birth certificates. And she said, but I must have been between the age of 5 and 7 when I got married. And this really went like a knife through my heart, because at that time, my own daughters were 5 and 6 years old. And I thought about the lottery of life. If my daughters had been born there in northern Ethiopia, they might have been married at that time. And it really felt like this is an injustice that just cannot continue. I mean, the geography, the place where you're born, should not determine destiny. The chances that you have to live in, you know, a well-educated and happy life. But then I think of the girls who I met in Indonesia, who some of them ended up in child marriage because sex is a taboo. And so people don't really want to talk about it. And that's not just in Indonesia. That is in many places in the world, including in the West. And so these girls didn't know how you get pregnant. They didn't know that you can have contraceptives to avoid getting pregnant. And so these girls, thanks to the inappropriate advances of boys, end up pregnant. And that means that they're basically then forced to marry the men who made them pregnant and normally then also leave school. So the reasons why it happens are different. And that's why it's also so important when you try to solve this issue that you look carefully at why is it happening in this particular community What are the reasons and how can we change it?
It wasn't so long ago that, that child marriage was totally normal in Europe, in the developed world. I mean, I was just thinking, you know, Soren Kierkegaard was engaged to a 15-year-old girl. Novalis was engaged to a 12-year-old girl. These were famous moral philosophers in Europe in the 19th century. So how do you avoid the problem of seeming ethnocentric or condescending? We don't do this anymore. Speaking to the developed world, you can't do it anymore.
I think it's a very good point. I mean, you cannot come in as an outsider into a community and tell them this is wrong, stop it. I think if you, what you're ultimately talking about, what needs to happen is social norm change. You need to change what people consider normal. And that can only be done in an effective way if you are, do it in a respectful way, and if it's done by people who the community trusts. So foreigners walking into a community and saying this is wrong is not going to work. Let's also not forget, I don't think that any parent wants to hurt their children. So parents want the best for their children. So what we see is that when you want to create lasting change, yes, you need laws that set a minimum age of marriage. Yes, you need alternatives. You know, you need to make sure that there's schooling, that there is reproductive health, contraceptives, that all that is available. But in the end, if you really want to get to the point where parents say, go from, of course my daughter will be married at age 14, to, of course my daughter will not be married at the age of 14, you need social normative change to happen in a community. And what we know how best to do that is by actually having people who are trusted by the community do that. And sit down with them and not tell them what you're doing is wrong, but start talking about it. And I've seen these programs with my own eyes, and it is fascinating. They take time. But, you know, you sit down with everybody in the community every other Friday under the big tree, and you talk about how come that we're so poor? How come that so many of our young girls die in childbirth? How come, you know, X, Y, Z? And then you help people understand about rights. You help people understand about alternatives. And what we see happen then is communities that collectively decide by themselves to say, look, we thought we were doing the right thing. We're no longer gonna marry our daughters at a young age. We know it is better for all of us, not just for the girls, not to do it. And we will all be wealthier and healthier if we do so. And that's amazing. And that's the power of change. And that's what also makes me hopeful that if we can kind of scale these programs up and really empower these local change makers to make it possible for them to work with local traditional leaders, with local religious leaders, with the teachers, with anybody who holds power in the community. If they can all work together on a grassroots level, I think we can see a change at scale that right now we find still hard to imagine.
Yeah, it's such an important point that norms are more important than laws. I mean, I think you can go all over the United States and find states like Massachusetts where child marriage is legal if the parents agree to it at, you know, the age of 12, but it doesn't happen because it's not done anymore. But does the law play a role as well?
The laws, to a certain extent, plays a role. I mean, well, India has had a law that for about 100 years that says no marriage under the age of 18, and that was ignored. So laws can play a role if they get implemented. But changing of laws and discussing laws can help to create an environment in which change is easier. The situation in the United States is actually quite disturbing in that the number of child brides in the United States seems to be around 25,000 per year. Now, if you look at the global scale of child marriage, 12 million per year, 25,000 isn't a whole lot. But 25,000 girls in a country like the United States getting married every year, I just find that flabbergasting. And what's disturbing is that until about a year or so ago, you could get married in the United States in every state, all of the 50 states, below the age of 18. Because either states had no minimum age of marriage, or they had a minimum age of marriage at, for example, 12 or 16, or those states that had 18 as the minimum age of marriage, there were so-called exemplary clauses, where basically with the permission of your parents or the permission of a judge, you could actually marry before the age of 18. Now, that's starting to change. There are two states, New Jersey and Delaware, that have changed it, if I remember the states correctly. And we know that in Massachusetts and in other states, there's now a push to change the laws, which also helps them to get a dialogue going. But what I found most disturbing is when I learned that these girls, take a girl 16-year-old in the United States who gets married. She's not allowed until she's 18 to buy a house. Because legally, for everything else, you need to be 18 before you can sign any contract. She's not allowed to vote until she's 18 years old because we don't trust her, apparently, with our vote. But if she ends up in an abusive marriage, if her husband actually hits her or mentally abuses her, and she wants to escape to a safe house, she's not allowed to enter a safe house on her own because she's a minor.
She needs her parents' permission for that,
too. Or her husband's permission. And the same way, she can maybe get married, but she can't file for a divorce till she's 18. So that's a crazy situation, and that clearly needs to change.
Yeah. I'm really heartened that you think child marriage could be eliminated by 2030. That's in 11 years. How will we see that happen? Will it be particular places that we make dramatic progress quickly, or do you think this is going to be a simultaneous global phenomenon of consciousness and reduction in child marriage?
It will have to be a magical mix of all that. So we've looked at, okay, how do you end child marriage? And we've worked together with 150 experts worldwide on looking at what are the interventions needed to end child marriage. And that work took us a year and a half, and we developed a theory of change, which can be found on the girlsnotbrides.org website. And basically, we found there are four kinds of interventions that need to happen. First is you need to empower girls. You need them to realize that they have rights and that child marriage is not necessarily a legal nor a good thing. But just empowering girls is not going to do the trick on its own, because girls can't stand up to their parents on their own. Secondly, you need to sensitize those who make the decision in the community about when a girl should get married, the decision makers. So that can be the parents, can be the local religious or traditional leaders. And you need to do that, as we were discussing, in a respectful way. Thirdly, you need to make sure that there are alternative services for these girls. So there needs to be education, because if you keep a girl out of marriage but you can't educate her, you're not really helping her. Similarly, you know, you need to make sure that she gets a reproductive health education. And then fourthly, we need to make sure that there are policies and laws in place and actually getting implemented. And if you do all these things, then we know you can make progress. Now, that sounds complex, but at the same time, we see a lot of momentum in people wanting to do this. And again, something being complex doesn't mean that it can't be done. So we need to do that country by country by country by country. And local non-governmental organizations are going to play a big role in that, because they are the ones that can really work in the community with the parents and with the families who do this. But at the same time, when you have governments putting their weight behind this and saying, you know, we, the government of Mozambique, are now making sure that all our laws are consistent and say 18 is the minimum age of marriage, and we're going to have government policy on ending child marriage, that helps to create momentum. And there, what we see then is that governments, once they start, because this issue is now on the global agenda and not longer ignored, governments start competing for wanting to be the front runner. So what we need to do is, on the one hand, change on a grassroots level, but we also need to see change happening at a national level. And then we need that kind of global competition and make the issue, you know, relevant, or keep it relevant on a global level. And it's really exciting to see that that's happening. And what I think then what happens is you get this accelerator, because people start seeing positive change happening. And what I've learned over my years working on creating social change, not just in the field of child marriage, but also in other areas, is when there's positive momentum, people want to be part of it. It works like a magnet. And so I'm sure that with the progress we're seeing, we're only going to pull in more people who want to help to create change. And we're going to see more villages that say, look, we actually want to end child marriage. And so then it will start spreading like a wildfire, which is what makes me hopeful that we can actually do this in what might seem very ambitious in an 11 or 12 year time frame.
Mabel, it's wonderful that you've taken on this problem the way you have. What are some of the things listeners can do if they want to get involved or help reduce and leading towards the elimination of child marriage?
Well, what would first of all be wonderful is that if listeners could help to raise awareness about the issue. Because yes, compared to a decade ago, there's much more attention to child marriage, but it isn't enough yet. Secondly, what listeners can do is those who work in the development field, actually, if they work on issues of violence against children, if they work on education, if they work on maternal health, if they work on family planning, in whatever programs they do, it would be good if they take into account the impact that is child marriage is having on their work. And then people who are not in this field, working in this field, but who feel passionate about this issue, I would encourage them to become part of a new initiative that we've started, which is called the Vow to End Child Marriage. Vow like a V-O-W, taking a vow. And the idea of Vow is basically that everybody in the world can help work together and can actually make a contribution to end child marriage. And what we're doing is specifically targeting the wedding industry, because we believe that it should be possible when a couple in the rich and West gets married and say, I do to each other, that they can then help girls elsewhere in the world to say, I don't. And so what we're trying to do is make it possible for people who are getting married or who are renewing their vows or who are celebrating their 20th wedding anniversary to do three things. One is they can actually register their wedding registry list with the knot, and if they align it with vow, then up to 3% of all the gifts, that money will be given to vow to support grassroots work to end child marriage, the work in the communities. Secondly, you can buy vow, specific vow products, like their specific wedding dresses, and there are going to be other products that if you buy them, a percentage or a fixed amount will actually go to vow. And lastly, I mean, we live in an age where people feel often they already have everything and they don't need more stuff in their houses. And so people who feel that way, they can maybe make a donation to vow instead of asking for gifts. So the idea here is that we're going to get companies and people working in the wedding industry with cake, baking cakes or doing the wedding flowers or doing the wedding hair, the wedding makeup, or couples and their friends and family, that everybody unites in order to make sure that girls elsewhere in the world can decide whether they want to get married, with whom they want to get married, and most importantly, when they want to get married.
Mabel, thanks for joining us on Solvable.
Thank you for talking about this. I hope that by working together, we can make sure that all girls can be girls and not brides.
Wow. Well, that conversation certainly upended some assumptions that I had about child marriage. I didn't know it was a worldwide issue, and I didn't know how big a problem it was. 12 million girls. Ugh. But also, as Mabel said, just because an issue is complex and big doesn't mean we should throw up our hands and ignore it. I love Mabel's suggestion for couples planning a wedding to use that opportunity to help vow. You can donate, you can buy vow products or register your wedding with them. And all the proceeds go to Girls First Fund, who distribute them to local organisations across Africa, Asia, Latin America and the Caribbean. These organisations work tirelessly to prevent child marriage. So your big day, that could mean something to girls everywhere. Solvable is a collaboration between Pushkin Industries and the Rockefeller Foundation, with production by Laura Hyde, Hester Kant, Laura Sheeter and Ruth Barnes from Chalk and Blade. Pushkin's executive producer is Mia LaBelle, research by Sher Vincent, engineering by Jason Gambrell and the great folks at GSI Studios. Original music composed by Pascal Wise, and special thanks to Maggie Taylor, Heather Fine, Julia Barton, Carly Migliori, Jacob Weisberg, and Malcolm Gladwell. You can learn more about solving today's biggest problems at rockefellerfoundation.org/solvable. I'm Maeve Higgins. Now go solve it.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.